You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire. The DOJ shuts down the war zone rat. Ransomware hits over 20 Romanian hospitals, and Rysita gets a decryptor. Canada may ban the Flipper Zero. Chinese espionage claims against the U.S. are light on facts. Australia looks to criminalize doxing. Federal IT leaders seek better coordination with CISA and the JCDC. Wired looks at the effect of cyber attacks on inequality. Our guest is Manny Felix, founder and CEO of U.S. Cyber Initiative, sharing their work in unlocking cyber career opportunities for young people. And this thumb drive will self-destruct in 5 seconds. It's Monday, February 12th, 2024. I'm Dave Bittner, and this is your CyberWire Intel Briefing. Happy Monday, everyone. Thank you for joining us. We are glad to have you with us. The U.S. Justice Department has taken decisive action against the distribution of Warzone remote access Trojan malware, which enabled cyber criminals to exploit victims' devices for data theft and surveillance. Authorities shut down the warzone.ws website and three related domains and unveiled indictments against individuals in Malta and Nigeria involved in the malware's sale and support. Daniel Melli, 27, from Malta, was arrested and charged with offering malware services since 2012, including Warzone and Pegasus, with a U.S. court seeking his extradition. Prince Onyezori Odunakashi, age 31, from Nigeria, was also arrested, charged with hacking and providing customer support for Warzone purchasers. The operation saw collaboration across international law enforcement, including the FBI, Europol, and agencies from multiple countries, leading to the disruption of Warzone's infrastructure. Melli faces up to 25 years in prison and a minimum fine of $500,000, while Odunakashi could face 15 years and a similar fine. A ransomware attack over the weekend targeted a medical management and patient data software platform in Romania, used by at least 21 hospitals, rendering the system offline by encrypting its database. The Romanian Ministry of Health announced that the attack is under investigation with the aid of IT and cybersecurity experts from the National Cybersecurity Directorate as they explore recovery options and implement precautionary measures for unaffected hospitals. The attack impacted various medical centers, including emergency, oncology, and cardiovascular hospitals. There's currently no information about the ransomware group responsible or whether patient data was compromised. The software provider, RSC, has not commented on the incident. Meanwhile, Korean researchers have created a decryptor for files encrypted by Rysida ransomware, known for attacks on high-profile targets since May 2023. The decryptor's development hinged on analyzing the ransomware's use of the libtomcrypt library and its pseudo-random number generator for key and initialization vector generation. The breakthrough was identifying the PRNG's reliance on the ransomware's execution time, allowing the researchers to predict the encryption key and vector by the order of files encrypted and the random numbers generated. This research marks the first successful decryption of Rysida ransomware, offering hope for mitigating its impact. Canadian officials are poised to ban the sale and use of the Flipper Zero, a popular hacking tool, due to concerns over its potential for malicious use, particularly in escalating car thefts. Announced by Minister François-Philippe Champagne, the ban aims to curb the rising trend of vehicle thefts, which see around 90,000 cars stolen annually, costing the country approximately $1 billion. The Flipper Zero, which retails at about $170, is a versatile device capable of testing vulnerabilities in various wireless networks and systems. While it's marketed toward tech enthusiasts and white hat hackers for penetration testing, its misuse has raised alarms, leading to its impending prohibition in Canada. This move highlights the ongoing challenge of balancing the empowerment of ethical hacking with the prevention of technology's nefarious applications. Critics of Canada's pending prohibition wonder why officials aren't focusing their energy on improving automobile security. Researchers at SentinelOne highlight the fact that when Western cybersecurity reports detail nation-state espionage, especially linking such activities to China, the reports base their claims on thorough technical evidence. In contrast, Chinese claims about Western espionage, particularly from the U.S., lack this level of detail, relying more on policy-driven narratives than on technical proof. This discrepancy has been a consistent pattern, with Chinese cybersecurity entities typically refraining from publishing in-depth technical data, instead echoing information from foreign sources or leaked U.S. documents. This approach shifted slightly in 2021 when China began to more actively disseminate narratives about U.S. cyber operations, yet still without presenting new technical evidence. Recent allegations from China about U.S. hacking, including claims of targeting the Wuhan Earthquake Monitoring Center, remain unsubstantiated. The narrative push appears more propaganda-driven than based on factual analysis, highlighting a strategic play by China to frame the U.S. negatively in the global cybersecurity discourse, without adhering to the evidentiary standards expected in Western cybersecurity circles. This dynamic underscores a broader geopolitical contest in the domain of cyber intelligence and information warfare, where the balance between making public accusations and providing concrete evidence remains a contentious issue. Speaking of China, Duke Energy is set to decommission and phase out Chinese energy storage batteries at a major Marine Corps base and its civilian projects, amid U.S. concerns over potential network vulnerabilities to Chinese government-linked hackers. The decision marks a shift in Duke Energy's strategy, aiming to replace battery technology from China firm CATL with domestic or allied suppliers by 2027, reflecting broader U.S. efforts to secure critical infrastructure and support a robust American supply chain. Despite industry views that Chinese battery cells may not pose significant security risks, concerns over the potential for hacking through battery communication systems have prompted legislative actions to limit the use of Chinese-produced batteries in U.S. defense applications starting in 2027. Australia is set to introduce new federal laws to criminalize doxing, the malicious publication of private information online. The effort was announced by Prime Minister Anthony Albanese in response to activists publishing the names and details of hundreds of Jewish individuals by anti-Zionist activists, sparking widespread condemnation. These changes, aimed at protecting personal privacy, will make it a criminal offense to engage in doxing, with exemptions for public interest journalism. The government's rapid response also includes plans to develop stronger laws against hate speech, reflecting a commitment to counter the rise of anti-Semitism and other forms of religious or faith-based targeting in Australia. This move has been welcomed by community leaders and marks a significant step in bolstering privacy and anti-hate speech protections at the federal level in Australia. Federal IT officials have called for improved coordination and stricter security standards from the Security and Infrastructure Security Agency and its Joint Cyber Defense Collaborative. While acknowledging CISA's critical role in federal cybersecurity, tech leaders from the Treasury Department and the Department of Veterans Affairs stress the need for more aggressive and common operating standards rather than voluntary participation. They highlighted gaps in information sharing, especially regarding vulnerabilities and threat indicators from cloud service providers and major vendors. The officials also emphasized the importance of a centralized cyber defense strategy and better preparation against cyber threats, including those posed by artificial intelligence and machine learning. Collaboration within the JCDC involving various federal and private entities was recognized as positive but still developing. The JCDC has unveiled its 2024 priorities, reflecting a unified effort among public, private, and international partners towards key cybersecurity outcomes. Building on the previous year's agenda, the JCDC introduces three main focus areas: defending against advanced persistent threat operations, with a special emphasis on threats from entities affiliated with the People's Republic of China; raising the cybersecurity baseline to protect critical infrastructure and reduce the impact of ransomware; and anticipating emerging technology risks, particularly the cybersecurity challenges posed by artificial intelligence. These priorities aim to enhance the collective defense posture, support innovation in cyber defense, and ensure technology is secure by design. A story in Wired from Nicole Tisdale makes the case that cyber attacks are exacerbating inequalities, impacting over 39 million people in 2023 through healthcare-related breaches alone, and disproportionately affecting marginalized communities, including low-income families, communities of color, veterans, people with disabilities, and immigrants. These attacks target essential pillars of society, such as healthcare, economic opportunity, education, and democratic participation, creating a civil rights crisis. Cybercriminals exploit vulnerabilities, leading to identity theft, financial fraud, and erosion of trust in crucial services. Notably, healthcare breaches have sown distrust among communities historically mistreated by medical systems, while economic attacks have stolen millions from public assistance funds, affecting those in financial hardship. Educational institutions face ransomware threats, compromising sensitive student information and threatening equitable access to education. Cyber operations also undermine democratic participation, using AI-powered disinformation to suppress minority votes and sow distrust in the electoral process. Tisdale concludes that addressing these cyber threats requires a concerted effort to build inclusive defenses and incorporate civil rights perspectives into cybersecurity strategies, emphasizing the urgent need for a comprehensive response to secure digital access and equity for all communities. Coming up after the break, our guest, Manny Felix, founder and CEO of the U.S. Cyber Initiative, shares their work in unlocking cyber career opportunities for young people. Stay with us. Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business. It is my pleasure to welcome to the show Manny Felix. He is the founder and chief executive officer of the AZ Cyber Initiative. That's a nonprofit that's dedicated to unlocking career opportunities for young people who are interested in cyber and emerging technology. Manny, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Dave.
So let's start out with a little bit of your origin story here in terms of the AZ Cyber Initiative. What prompted you to start this organization?
It really started once I enlisted in the United States Navy. Upon graduating from college, I majored in a political science degree and with another double major in Spanish translation and interpretation. And shortly after graduating, I actually enlisted, and my job or my rate within the Navy was actually a cryptologic technician for networks, for Navy networks. So I was in charge of and went through a training of how to protect the Navy's networks. And that was what really introduced me and started my awareness and exposure to the field of cybersecurity. And upon completing that training, every job that I had since then was around cybersecurity, working for as a government contractor, working for industry and management consulting, or even working for in the startup area within cybersecurity as well. Just all those, and in the military, all those backgrounds in cybersecurity led me to the conclusion and to the realization that I always wish I would have learned about cybersecurity and perhaps even had the opportunity to brush up on my technical skills that I think would have helped me advance much sooner and much faster in my career, especially on the path where I was finding myself within this industry. And I thought to myself, I'm hoping that no other student has to go through this realization too late into their career. I would want them instead to learn early on and have the preparation, the awareness, so they can start to develop those skills early on. And for when they're in my position, they're way more advanced and set for success in whatever they choose to pursue.
Well, take me through that moment when you decided to start the nonprofit itself. I mean, what were your feelings going into it?
There were many feelings. One, it really started at the peak of COVID in late 2020. I had just commissioned as an officer earlier in that year, and when I came back, the entire world was sort of figuring out what was happening and what the next day would look like. There was a lot of uncertainty happening. But I recall feeling when I was at the training in Newport, Rhode Island, I was surrounded by other individuals and service members that were also commissioning, but were just so mission-driven and impact-driven in their own fields and in their own careers. I remember feeling inspired by those people, and I held on to that feeling. And I started to figure out how I could combine my passion of looking for ways to help others and trying to bring that awareness that I mentioned earlier of bringing cybersecurity literacy and awareness for the different job paths as well. And that's how I ultimately decided to start the nonprofit.
Well, let's talk about the day-to-day of the organization. I mean, how do you interact with the folks who benefit from your services? And what's the range of services you provide?
Sure. the way that we interact has truly evolved since we initially started. So like I said, we started at the height of the pandemic. So while I started to structure the organization in late 2020, our first, what we call cyber bootcamp, wasn't organized or didn't take place until the summer of 2021. And the cyber bootcamp, what that is, it's a program, a week-long program that is designed for high school students so they can learn cybersecurity fundamentals and also get to hear from different industry and professionals, whether they're in industry, public sector, they're in military, they're entrepreneurs, they've exited companies, or they're in marketing for a cybersecurity company or for a cybersecurity role. They get to hear from their journey, as well as get to ask them questions about how, you know, what were some of the skills or activities they were doing in high school, and find ways for the students to draw connections to those skills and aptitudes. And hopefully they can start to identify a path for themselves. And that was virtual. And as COVID started to be a little bit behind us, we shifted to an in-person cyber bootcamp program. And then for the following summer of 2022, we had 5 in-person cyber bootcamps. And we choose these in different locations throughout the state, often in a university campus or a community college. And we want to choose these locations where students can start to see themselves and think of higher ed or what they want to do upon graduation. All of this being said is that we now offer basically cyber bootcamps whenever there is no school. So think summer break, fall break, and spring break. Hmm. We're able to really supplement and augment the learning that is happening during schools, or actually the lack of cyber learning that is happening in high schools or in all K-12 institutions. And we bring that awareness during this time. But what we learned is that many students were interested in learning more about cybersecurity and how to get into this field after they completed the cyber bootcamp. So then we started to think, all right, this is going beyond a 1-week program. Students are really interested in finding themselves invested in this career, and they want to learn more. And schools just didn't have the resources, sometimes in funding, or sometimes with, they don't have the teachers that are helping out with their CTE programs. And so they're not able to find a champion in their schools, or sometimes even at home, that is helping them pursue or continue to learn about cybersecurity. And that responsibility sort of falls on us. And we're very happy to take on that challenge, because since then we've found ways to partner with different nonprofits and organizations to bring internship opportunities for students that want to really learn how to be professional, working, quote unquote, working adults, right? That they get real hands-on experience, although they're held virtually, but they're doing project management related work. They're working towards deliverables, or they're working in teams, or learning public speaking skills. They're presenting to real customers, whether they're small or medium-sized businesses, and they're meeting their deadlines and they're getting paid for it. And that's the real value of what we've been able to accomplish, I think, is identifying the students that are not just learning about cybersecurity and are getting a stipend upon completing that week-long bootcamp. We're asking them to take some time off from other responsibilities, or some of the students that we serve, majority are of minority students, and therefore there's very likely the reality of many of these students means that they have to take some days off work in order to participate in this program. And the stipend really helps supplement some of that income that they may be otherwise missing out if they go to work.
Right. It's my understanding that you have some aspirations here of growth.
Yes. Again, we've recognized there's a lot of interest, not just within the state, but we've presented in different conferences and events, and we've had the pleasure of meeting many individuals from different schools, from out of state, that have been wondering how we can bring AZ Cyber into their states or into their communities. And for the longest time, I hated giving this answer. I did not want to be the bearer of bad news and say that we only offer this currently for Arizona students, but we're very fortunate that this coming April, we're actually piloting and doing our first expansion into San Diego, which means that we're becoming a national organization. We're really growing into what is now becoming U.S. Cyber Initiative. And we're hoping that through this new approach and through our new mission, we can continue to bring our model and our lessons learned and our successes, everything that we've learned over the last couple of years, into different communities and schools that are looking to replicate what we've been able to accomplish in Arizona and into their backyards and into their homes. So students at the end of the day are the ones that are really benefiting from this kind of program and this kind of work. But it really trickles into not just youth, but it also helps educators and it helps community. It's helping build people who are cyber aware or great digital citizens. They have the cyber knowledge and skills, and then they pass on that knowledge to their parents and grandparents, which are often the ones that are being most targeted against cyber attacks and ransomware attacks. We're very excited that our mission is able to reach a national audience, and we're excited to what this opportunity can lead to.
Manny Felix is the founder and chief executive officer of the AZ Cyber Initiative. Manny, thanks so much for taking the time for us today.
Thank you for having me, Dave.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And finally, our gadgets desk tells us about the Overdrive USB stick, nearing its crowdfunding target on CrowdSupply. The device features a self-destruct mechanism that can heat its flash chip to 100 degrees Celsius, offering a Mission Impossible-style data protection. Developed by Ryan Walker of Interrupt Labs, it includes a unique privacy feature where data remains hidden unless the device is inserted in a specific manner. Manufacturing challenges led to retaining the self-destruction circuitry without activation by default, encouraging DIY enhancements for interested users. Overdrive is aimed at journalists, security experts, and open hardware enthusiasts, especially in regions with encryption restrictions. It has achieved 83% of its $3,500 goal with 24 days remaining in the campaign. Ethan Hunt, call your office.
This tape will self-destruct in 5 seconds. Good luck, Dave.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. Don't forget to check out the Grumpy Old Geeks podcast, where I contribute to a regular segment on Jason and Brian's show every week. You can find Grumpy Old Geeks where all the fine podcasts are listed. We'd love to know what you think of this podcast. You can email us at cyberwire@n2k.com. We're privileged that N2K and podcasts like The Cyberwire are part of the daily intelligence routine of many of the most influential leaders and operators in the public and private sector, as well as the critical security teams supporting the Fortune 500 and many of the world's preeminent intelligence and law enforcement agencies. N2K Strategic Workforce Intelligence optimizes the value of your biggest investment, your people. We make you smarter about your team while making your team smarter. Learn more at n2k.com. This episode was produced by Liz Stokes. Our mixer is Trey Hester, with original music by Elliot Peltzman. Our executive producers are Jennifer Iben and Brandon Karp. Our executive editor is Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.